Good morning. We're here on October 25th, 2016 at 12 p.m. noon for the continued 341 meeting in the Chapter 11 cases of RMS Titanic Incorporated. And before I go down through the list of cases, my name is Miriam Suarez, and I'm an attorney with the Office of the United States Trustee, which is a component of the Department of Justice, and I will be conducting the meeting this afternoon. The first case, the lead case, is RMS Titanic Incorporated, bankruptcy case number 3-16-BK-2230, filed in the Middle District of Florida, Jacksonville Division. And there are several joint...
Joining the meeting.
Scott Grossman.
Okay. There are several jointly administered cases, and I'm going to go through and name them for the record. There's 16-2232, Premier Exhibitions Incorporated, 16-2233, Premier Exhibitions Management, LLC, 16-2234, Premier Exhibitions International, LLC, 16-2235, Premier Exhibitions NYC, Incorporated, 16-2236, Premier Merchandising, LLC, 16-2237, Dinosaurs Unearthed Corporation, and 16-2238, Arts and Exhibitions Internationals, LLC. And again, this is the continued 341 meeting for these jointly administered cases. Is the debtor present? Enter an appearance, counsel for the debtor.
Good afternoon. Daniel Blanks with Nelson Mullins on behalf of the debtors.
Okay. And who are the representatives that are present here today for the debtors?
Jerome Henshaw, Chief Financial Officer for
joining
the debtors.
The meeting.
Jessica Sanders, Corporate Secretary.
Okay, Ms. Sanders, could you repeat your name?
Yes, Jessica Sanders, Corporate Secretary.
Okay. And the creditors that are present in the 341 meeting room, if you could enter an appearance for
before
the record.
Before you do that, there's another counsel for the debtors.
All right.
Sorry. Brian Wanger from Kaleo Legal on behalf of the debtors.
Okay, thank you. Okay. And we'll keep going, I guess, counterclockwise, Mr. Thames.
Sure. Richard Thames on behalf of the Official Committee of Unsecured Creditors.
Okay.
Peter Gerfein on behalf of the Official Committee of Equity Security Holders.
All right.
Jay Brown and Katie Fackler with Ackerman, also on behalf of the Official Committee of Equity Holders.
Okay.
Alexandria Hill with Ray Robinson on behalf of 417 Fifth Avenue.
Thank you.
Rob Hagen Jr. here with Mr. Thames on behalf of the Official Committee of Unsecured Creditors.
Ellsworth Summers with Burke Foreman on behalf of Mike Lilly.
Thank you. Sir, did you want to enter an appearance for the record? The gentleman in the corner? No? Okay.
We can do it for the record.
Okay.
The Daoping Bao, the CEO of the debtors, is present.
All right. Thank you. And on the phone? Can you all hear me?
Yeah, you got Giovanni Wong from the Packridge Capital Partners.
Chris Broussard here as well, the Armada Group GP.
This is Scott Grossman of Greenberg Traurig on behalf of secured creditors Lang Fang, Haiping Zhu, and Jiahei Zhang.
Okay, it's a little difficult to hear you all on the telephone. So if the three of you could send an email to Mr. Baumkamp at the U.S. Trustee's Office with your names and the parties you're representing, and copy myself, Miriam Suarez, that way I'll be able to fill that information in for the record. All right.
Sure.
All right, we'll get started. All right, thank you. I'm going to go ahead and swear in Ms. Sanders first. Ms. Sanders, if you please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Henshaw, if you please will raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay, thank you. And in the interest of time and convenience of the parties, since this is a continued meeting, what I'm going to do is go ahead and start letting the creditors ask questions, and the committees are here today, and so we're going to start that way and go from there. All right? Mr. Thames or Mr. Brown, I don't know, whoever wants to.
I'll go ahead and start.
Okay. All right.
And this will be for either of you, whoever wants to answer. I want to ask you first about the cash collateral situation for the company. According to the schedules that have been filed in this case, three individuals hold security interests and blanket liens on the debtor's assets. Are you aware of that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. And do you have the lien holder's consent to use their cash collateral?
Yes, we do.
Is that in written form?
I believe a motion was filed. No. Sorry.
Are you presently segregating the proceeds from the use of any collections on pre-petition receivables?
No.
And why has no motion for authority to use cash collateral been filed?
I'm sorry, I don't know. I have to refer to counsel for that.
And I guess without knowing if I file one, do you expect to file one in the near future?
I think that would involve some attorney-client privilege.
Would you concede then you're using the lender's cash collateral without a formal order or consent of record?
Without formal order or consent. We do have consent.
Okay.
Might be verbally.
Are you aware there's an approximate four-month gap between the grant of a security interest in favor of those three lien holders and the filing of the UCC-1 financing statements?
Are you talking about the MORs?
Talking about the UCC-1 financing statements that were filed with the Secretary of State to perfect the liens.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that section of the law or those code numbers.
Does the debtor intend to challenge the grant of a security interest in favor of the lien holders as a preferential transfer?
I'm sorry, you're talking legal things which I don't have expertise in.
I'm not asking you to whether it is avoidable. I'm just asking you, does the debtor intend to pursue an action to avoid the claim lien on the receivable?
I think they call for, again, legal advice.
I'm not asking for that. I'm just saying, does the debtor intend? This is their intent.
I don't know what the intention results in, so I can't tell you that.
Would you have any objection to the Unsecured Creditors Committee pursuing a preference avoidance action against the lien holders?
I think we need counsel on that.
We need counsel. Sorry.
Before this meeting, we were provided with an outline of the corporate structure of the premier entities. Who prepared this document? It's on the left-hand corner. It says PRXI corporate structure.
I did.
Right. Does this document accurately list all of the subsidiaries and affiliates of Premier Exhibitions, Inc.?
There, I believe there is, since the time that you were provided this, I've updated it one time more. There has been a name change for one of the entities that is dormant and benign. Exhibitions International was up. It was a name change to Premier Hollywood Pictures. It's a limited liability. It's just a name change in Nevada. Then also connecting with, again, we're less than 1 year post merger, so connecting with the folks in Canada. There was one additional dormant Dino King subsidiary, Dino King International, that falls under Dino King Tech. So I'm happy to email the updated chart to you tomorrow when we're back in the office. But those are the only two changes. And obviously, we took off the FEIN numbers on your version.
I appreciate that. And yes, I'll take you up on that offer.
Okay.
Are the Chapter 11 debtor entities funding operations for any of the non-filed subsidiaries?
No.
Are they transferring? We were provided previously with a proposed cash collateral budget, which showed a $70,000 a month contribution going over to the non-filed entities. Does the debtor, in fact, transfer money over to the other entities?
The Dino King Tech, the Canadian company, which is not in Chapter 11, the premier companies use its credit cards facilities. So we transfer money to repay the amounts that the premier employees use in the credit cards. We also, Dino King Tech Inc. charges premier with 50% of the salaries of 9 individuals, including our CEO. So there is an invoice every month for
for, at this point, the ongoing monthly invoice is around $34,000 US that is transferred from Premier to Dining King.
Or just the salaries, or for the credit card reimbursement?
Oh, sorry, that's separate. The salaries are a separate invoice. The credit card reimbursements are the actual amount of the credit cards that, like, we have in the U.S. We use the Canadian credit cards in the U.S. operation.
And
they're reconciled monthly, and the exact amount is transferred to Dining King to reimburse.
Is there a post-petition balance in favor of the debtor entities, or the other way around?
It's the other way around. Actually, at petition date, when we did all the, we caught up the accounting, it was way behind. We caught it all up, and in fact, the Premier, the companies in Chapter 11, owe Dining King over $600,000.
And by what you're saying, then the Chapter 11 debtors owe Dino King some additional post-petition money, correct?
The post-petition monies are now cleared every month.
So they're zeroed out, excepting the pre-petition.
Correct. But we were very careful to go right up to June 14th with the intercompany accounts. We made sure that the Premier did not pay Dino King for that amount.
All right, and which entities are transferring the funds to Dining King?
To Dining King? It would be Premier Exhibition Management. That is where all our accounting and administration is.
So none of the other entities are transferring the funds over to Dining King?
No, they're a subsidiary of Dining King is Dinosaurs on Earth, Inc. They operate, let me explain it to you, Dining King owns all the animatronic dinosaurs, creatures of the deep, bugs, the exhibitions. When we have a contract in the United States, Dinosaurs on Earth is where the contract is booked. So Dinosaurs on Earth, which is in Chapter 11, uses the exhibitry, the dinosaurs, etc., of Dining King, and in return, Dinosaurs on Earth pays to Dining King a rental fee for the use of the exhibitry. At this point, we've been booking an amount of 65%. It was based on past studies done of the cost of the dinosaurs with depreciation and maintenance.
What was that percentage?
65 of the sale. So Dinosaur on Earth would have a $100,000 sale. We would, and all the dinosaurs, all the exhibition material belongs to Dining King. So we Dinosaurs on Earth would pay Dining King 65% of the sale. It still leaves a substantial amount of profit in Dinosaurs on Earth because there's no overhead there. It's just the company we use to do the invoicing.
And
we did this for tax transfer. We've had transfer pricing agreements done by large accounting firms, and they came up with these calculations that we use.
Well, how long has the 65% allocation been in effect?
The study that I took it off of was, I believe it was 2014 for that year end, and I don't think we've done enough. We do it every 3 years. We update our transfer pricing agreements so the CRA and IRS are happy. So
the 65% allocation has been in effect since 2014?
Correct. It turned out to be around 65%. We actually did a calculation.
Okay, but it wasn't done in 2016.
I'm doing it now as we speak. We will do it at the year end because we consolidate those two companies. They don't worry about it till the year end. So the end of December, I'll do a big adjustment for it. It's not done on a monthly basis.
Okay, but the 65% allocation has been in effect for 2015 and two. And you expect it to be something close to that in 2016?
That's correct, sir.
Okay. What type of items are being charged on these credit cards that the debtors are reimbursing?
For example, my trip here. If I go to Las Vegas to meet with the landlord, a trip there, we have a lot of staff, marketing staff and production staff that use it to go around to our different venues. We have exhibitions throughout the U.S., in Europe, in Australia, and China recently. So those credit cards are used for normal business travel for executives and staff who would set up the exhibits.
And those monthly expenditures, what are they at average?
At this, around $35,000 a month.
And
the $7,000 you saw, that was actually two months. It wasn't actually, and the gentleman who did those cash flows just picked up what we paid months before and used it down the pipe. It was incorrect, and I redid those cash flows. They don't even show that amount.
But then I think I heard you earlier say that another $35,000 or something like that goes out to cover salaries.
Correct.
Being paid by the non-debtor affiliates.
Yes.
And how would you get an accounting of the monthly credit card expenditures and salaries?
I provided the salaries, but I'll give you a monthly invoice if you wish to see it. It outlines all the employees, their monthly pay in Canadian dollars. 50% of it is converted to U.S. dollars. It includes the employee benefits.
Not that I want to be reviewing these things, but I think from a fiduciary perspective, we need to see the credit card statements and the salary payments.
I did send, the salary was sent on a schedule with my version of the cash flows. It showed the Canadian employees and added it to the U.S. employees, and that's what's in those cash flow projections. So.
Okay. And you'll
I have no problem giving the details.
Yeah. Been out of town for almost 2 weeks, so I'm kind of a little bit of catch up, and including not doing the stuff that was just sent around late last week.
Yeah, Sunday I sent you cash flows for the Canadian operations, and you'll see where we deduct what was billed to the U.S. It's right on the cash flow.
All right.
He wants the credit card transactions is what we want. We'll put that on.
Are any of the alleged secured creditors receiving payments from the non-debtor affiliates?
Not at this point. The secured creditors we did make July, it was made in August for July, we did make one payment, and then we were advised by our secured creditor attorney not to make those payments. So now we have not made August or September interest payments to the secured creditors. They're in our books as an accrual, as an accounts payable, but we haven't paid them.
And do you intend to seek court approval before you make any additional payments?
If that is required, yes. Yeah.
There's been a lot of discussion among counsel about a rule, it's a bankruptcy rule, that requires 2015.3, which requires that the financial reports for non-debtor entities, which are controlled by the debtor, that they file periodic reports with the court. First one was due 7 days after the petition was filed. I represent to you, it has not been filed. Do you know why it has not been filed?
Is it similar to the MOR?
It's similar but different. There are prescribed forms for that disclosure, but they are required to be filed within 7 days of the petition date, and they have not been filed.
I wasn't aware of those forms. We have sent the committees the financial statements for the end of August, and they'll get the September ones. Probably tomorrow or the next day. We sent them a whole set of financial statements for Dinah King.
I understand you send stuff to the committees, but this is an obligation that
to the court.
Goes to the court and to other parties who may not want to go through the committee to get the information. So I guess my question is,
I haven't aware of it.
Also, there seems to be some question on whether or not it's required from us to file for the subsidiaries that are not in Chapter 11. I think that's a legal discussion between the attorneys.
Well, what is the argument that they're not required to be filed?
They have to speak to our counsel.
Is there a business reason
why? I believe on
why?
The last call that we were on, this came up when all the counsel was on, and you asked this a similar question about these in particular, and I believe our counsel said that it wasn't required and the trustee did not expect it, so... From what we understand, we're not required to do it today.
You're saying the U.S. trustee did not require
that,
you to
that was the advice. No, that was the advice we were given from counsel.
We'll, this is Miriam Suarez for the record. We'll review that. I think you're talking about the Form B-26. It's what I think it used to be. And we'll look at that. I'll check with the analysts at the office. Affiliates are required to file them, depending on the percentage of ownership. I think it's the debtor owns a majority of it. They are supposed to file that. So I will check that with the analysts.
Thank you.
And visit and contact the debtor's counsel if it's required.
We have no problem filing it. We'll get caught up right away.
And it would have to be attached to the monthly operating report. So we'll go back and check on that.
And for your information, if there's a reason why they shouldn't be filed, there is a procedure in that rule for limiting the disclosure.
Thank you.
Now, some of the projections which you shared with us suggest that the debtors might run out of cash in the spring of 2017. Do you believe that to be the case?
I did a disclosure with those cash flows that I only recorded in the future cash flow, the touring contracts that were signed at the time I issued the cash flow. As we're an ongoing business, we sign new contracts every month. For example, last week we signed a contract with a museum in China, which will show up in the next cash flow. It'll probably generate $600,000 in cash next spring. So things change. It changes every week.
I can only do what
I know at the time. So I'm not going to make up numbers and pretend we might sign something down the road. I'd rather it be conservative. So worst case scenario, so to speak.
So you made no, if I understand what you're saying, you made no assumptions about there being future contracts signed up with the debtor for exhibitions.
That's correct.
This was, the revenue projections are based solely on the book of business
signed.
That exists.
Yeah. And we do sign, our touring contracts are signed 6 months to 3 years ahead. Like, if a particular customer needs an exhibition within 6 months, of course, if we have the inventory available, we'll do it. But quite often, it's more like a year ahead that they book a touring exhibition. So sometimes, 2 years. We have some booked for 2019 already. So.
Let me ask this then. You have the income. You made that assumption with respect to income. Did you make that same assumption with respect to expenses? For example, I know you to fulfill a contract, you're going to have to move the stuff there.
Well, that's not necessarily correct. A lot of our contracts, the client pays for the install and de-install. Now, the one we just got in Italy last month, it was included in those costs. So each contract's different, and it's why it took me so long to do the cash flow projections. I did a spreadsheet for every contract. Each contract has different collection terms on it. Sometimes we share revenue. Sometimes we have merchandise that we split. So it wasn't an easy task to do an accurate projection on it. So I took my time and did it properly. So.
Have you historically prepared these forecasts, or is this something that you're doing just at our request or in connection with the Chapter 11 case?
Truthfully, I joined the firm July 23rd. So I'm doing my best to get the accounting in order. And this was an extra burden on me, but now that it's done, the 50-page template's done. I'll be able to update it without delays, probably.
So then I guess, keep circling back to my original question, do you project to, is there a projection that you might run out of cash in March, April 2017, or now as a result of this contract, are we looking a little better?
The Premier side was going to run out of cash. This contract, it gave us two more months life, so to speak. And the Canadian side, I gave you those Sunday. They were emailed to the attorneys. We never run out of cash in Dynec. It's a bit seasonal. We're cash heavy in the summer because of our outdoor dinosaur exhibits and features exhibits. But in fact, the Canadian company, the lowest it got the last 12 months, the 12 months going forward, was around $500,000 U.S. So, and Delping is aware, I talked to him, our CEO, that you're prepared to transfer money? And he said, oh, yeah, sure, we're all one, so it's not going to be a problem.
Okay. So is that how, if we do have a liquidity crisis in the spring, how would you intend to cover it?
It's two methods. If there's excess cash, which doesn't completely hurt the business of Dynec Inc. because it's profitable, we will move it. We will loan it to the premier side in the States.
The second, as a loan?
It would be an intercompany loan. We'll document it, obviously, at this point quite well. We will also, we're looking at, with our new advisor, we're hoping that we can get some DIP financing in place.
Do you customarily move money back and forth, or is the company customarily move money back and forth between the entities to shore up shortfalls in one entity?
At this point, no. We're very cautious about moving money. We only reimburse actual expenses.
But historically, did the company routinely move money back and forth?
There are intercompany bounces from back in, I guess, December, January. There are some intercompany bounces, but I wasn't involved then. But so, did it happen? Yes, I'm sure there were some amounts that were moved back and forth, but not every week or every day.
Did each entity have its own bank accounts, or was it all consolidated under one Premier Exhibitions?
No, each entity, the Canadian two companies there. Yeah. Each company has their own bank account. Dynec Inc. has a bank account. Dinosaurs Unearthed, which is in Chapter 11, has a bank account. Premier, we have 20 or 30 accounts because they're all sweep accounts that come into a main account.
What is the company's plan for exiting this Chapter 11 proceedings?
We are in the process of engaging a firm, Glass Ratner, and Ron Glass is the principal of that company. We've already had meetings with him. We are very actively looking to Plan B. And even months ago, I had already circulated to board members different scenarios for Plan B.
Well, I want to focus on Plan A.
We haven't been ignoring it. We're still trying to run our business. and we have all these lawyers asking us for dozens and dozens of requests. And I'm trying to run a business.
I do mostly debtor work, so I understand understand the dilemma and I understand the burden, and that's why bringing in financial advisors is key in a big case. Let me ask you, though, I want to focus on Plan A. What is your preferred course for exiting these Chapter 11 proceedings?
We would like the court to give us permission to sell some of the 1987 artifacts called the French artifacts. When we've sort of delayed just a little bit in actually going out and starting that process to make sure that we, why you're like spinning your wheels if you can't sell them, why send out a request for proposal. So, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to hire a consultant, probably with one of the firms that specialize in selling antiques. We're not going to do it ourselves. We're going to hire people who know what they're doing in that very specialized area. Like, these artifacts are not something you put on eBay. Like, it's the process itself is going to take longer than some people may think, because we have to get a consultant to help us prepare a request for proposal. We have to get assistance in analyzing those requests. And then we have to, whoever we select, there's a marketing plan involved. It's not a quick process, because you don't want to sell them all at once. It's where you're flooding the market. It's like you have to very strategize how you're going to sell these particular assets, because we only want to sell enough of them to make the creditors whole. So that's our goal. And we don't want to destroy our business, too. So we want to make sure we have enough artifacts that we can still make beautiful exhibitions.
Okay.
Just to remind the debtor representative, both of them, that some of them, to be mindful of the attorney-client privilege in the work product.
Mm. I'm talking.
No.
So, if I can just add,
sure.
generally speaking. one of the things that we spoke with Ron Glass of Glass Ratner about is the proper way to approach this. And he is going to be very active in helping guide that process.
You're talking about the sales process, assuming it looks like we're going to have a green light to sell the
correct
artifacts.
We're intending to run parallel paths. So as we're approaching the sale process, we're still developing the plan B as well.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll finish with plan A just a little bit. One of the auction houses was Guernsey, I believe, looked at gave some appraisals or looked at selling the assets previously. Is that, are you going to go back to these same groups or?
Guernsey's was involved in the previous auction attempt when the company was looking to sell the entire collection as a whole. We have identified internally a couple of experts specifically for Titanic artifacts, not just art. I think Guernsey's was primarily an art auctioneer, but there are a couple that are specific to Titanic artifacts that we were looking to develop an RFP for those.
I don't want to get bogged down at this point, but you say they're experts that sell Titanic mm-hmm. artifacts. They've sold others in the past. Is that mm-hmm. what it is?
Correct. And the differentiating, I know you're looking at me like, how is that possible?
I know. There are a few items that came off
right.
with the lifeboats.
Well, there's items that came off the lifeboats. There's items that have survived with families. There's also items that were floating after the tragedy. So, but the items that the company has are the only items that have actually been salvaged from the wreck site from 2.5 miles underneath the water. So working with an auctioneer that has already a history seems to provide a benefit because they can consult with us and tell us potential yields. They have areas of expertise there. So, and there are a couple that have history in selling Titanic artifacts.
I won't get bogged down on plan A because I do know the dynamics of the hoops you have to jump through to get there.
Yeah.
Plan B, let me ask you, have you considered or consulted with anybody about spinning off any of the subsidiaries mm-hmm. as a potential solution?
Not yet.
Yes or no? Okay.
Not yet. However, again, we've just started in conversations with Ron Glass, and he's going to be helping us guide us through that. We are in the process now of getting information to him so he can take a look and give us an analysis of options.
And then there's another potential. Well, what is plan B? I guess I should ask you instead of suggesting it.
Sorry, it's not, we don't know yet. We're working on it.
All right. Has the company explored an equity raise?
It will be something we will consider.
As the company,
I don't think anything's off the table.
Have you done anything post petition to
explore
an equity raise post petition?
Not at this point.
Have you sought exit financing for these Chapter 11 cases?
I'm going to say no. Although our CEO has been out exploring opportunities. Other companies.
How much?
I haven't been involved at this point.
What's the bogey you're shooting for as far as exit financing?
I don't know yet. We're going to determine that. That's going to be part of the plan.
On the claims cutoff was yesterday, so
yeah.
So we'll just be quick
and we're going to try to raise enough money to pay the creditors off. So.
With the goal of 100%, obviously. That's the goal, to make everybody whole.
And I'm not going to ask about some of the individual claims that have been filed because there's some whoppers in there.
Agreed.
We'll do that another day. Tell me about the Glass Ratner application. They're coming in. I understand they're going to provide the financial advisor to serve in that role, but are they also going to be exploring the sale of potential spin outs of some of the subsidiaries?
I would think that would be part of their whole task to do, their engagement would be to look at any options. And we haven't restricted them. They know that we need a plan B, and we have to get a Chapter 11 because it's obviously too expensive to continue to operate in that mode.
Do you intend to ask them to solicit potential exit financing?
Correct. They have the part of their clause in their engagement letter was a fundraising clause. They get a small percent.
Okay.
Which we negotiated.
Yeah, which we cut in half.
Did let me ask you about your leases, the status of your leases. Are you current in all your post-petition leases?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Are you current in all your post-petition payables?
Yes, we are. In fact, we're getting paid sooner now than before petition. They're paid right before the 30 days or 15 days, whatever they're due.
Okay.
We do weekly check-ins.
All right. I'll just defer this point for the questions. I'll turn it over to Peter.
Thank you. Peter Gerfine for the Equity Committee. I have an organizational chart that you are kind enough to point out has been revised since I received this. Let me ask you to take a look at that the chart. And let me start with Exchange Co. on the far left.
Mm-hmm.
Subsidiary is Diner King Tech, and the subsidiary is Dinosaurs on Earth Corp. Ms. Sanders, you mentioned Diner King International.
Correct.
Is that a new entity?
No, it's not. It's just...
So it's just missing from the chart.
Correct. And it would fall directly under Dinosaurs Unearthed.
It's under Dinosaurs Unearthed.
Correct. It's another subsidiary of Diner King. So it's a peer to Dinosaurs Unearthed under Diner King Tech.
And where is that company, Diner King International Incorporated?
It's British Columbia.
BC also?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what kind of work does that do?
That one was incorporated in 2014. It's inactive. It's an inactive entity.
Okay.
So.
Does Diner King Tech do any business other than the ownership of the items it leases to Dinosaurs on Earth?
Yes, it does.
And what kind of work is that?
Any contracts for exhibits of dinosaurs, creatures of the deep, or stream bugs they're in Canada. They're booked in Diner King Tech. If they're in international, for example, we have creatures of the deep in Australia. That's booked in Diner King Tech. The only things that are booked in Dinosaurs on Earth are the U.S. Venues, U.S. exhibits.
The U.S. exhibits are all under Dinosaurs on Earth?
Correct. The U.S. exhibits of Dinosaurs, Creatures of the Deep, and Bugs Extreme.
Is it correct, then, that those similar exhibits, if they're Canada or other international, are contracted directly with Diner King Tech?
That's correct.
I see. And is Dinosaurs Unearthed then the only asset of Diner King Tech that's in the U.S.?
That's correct.
Other than whatever animatronic
yeah.
entities are leased to Dinosaurs Unearthed?
Correct.
Okay. You pointed out that Exhibitions International is now Premier Hollywood Pictures.
Correct.
And when did that happen?
About a month and a half ago.
And what was that in connection with?
Well, it was in connection with the proposed joint venture agreement. We haven't taken any action on it. It was just a name change getting prepared for it.
So it would be the intention of the debtors to contract with the license agreement with Premier Hollywood Pictures as the licensor?
At this point, I would say nothing is...
It's not.
Nothing's been decided. It was just something we did a name change because we had this company which was a shell company, so we just did it in preparation if something might happen down the road. We would never do anything without consulting the committees.
Right.
That was on the record.
In this particular instance.
Let me ask you about the UK entities that are on here. Are they functioning? That's RMS Titanic and Premier Exhibitions Limited?
I believe we are working to wind those down.
We've moved all the cash out of them into Premier in the United States. We've been told if we don't file, that they'll scratch us off the record. But then we were afraid we'd lose the name, so we're backtracking a bit and trying to get information from our agents there whether we can keep the names without having a corporation.
Right.
You know what I mean. But they're inactive. All the money's been repatriated.
And I will tell you that particularly for Premier Exhibitions UK, down at the bottom under PEM, that one we received notification that they were dropping us off the register as being inactive. So now the question is whether or not we wanted to reserve the name for going forward. We haven't looked at it. We don't know why we would need it, but we don't know why we wouldn't need it, so we haven't answered just yet.
Okay. Well, you'll keep us posted as
absolutely
to those responses.
And I'll send you an updated chart as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Let me start with some questions from the Statement of Financial Affairs. There's a reference on page 32 of 44 in document 20 to a transfer is not already listed on this statement. John Norman, sale of Pompeii Exhibitory Assets, expected July 2016, $232,047. That's a receivable, or is that an expense?
No, that particular transaction, that exhibit was quite worn out, so he assembled it together, and he guaranteed us a minimum of $50,000 for the exhibit. It was damaged in missing parts, so he has agreed to pay us $50,000 in early November, and that's not in my cash flow.
So
we also have a merchandising agreement with him. We had quite a bit of merchandise left in our warehouse for Pompeii exhibits. He is taking that inventory on consignment, and we expect it'll bring $200,000 or $300,000 in, we're hoping. Again, I haven't booked that in the cash flows. I'll book it when it's received.
Dependent on his ability, obviously, to book the shows. Right?
Okay, he has to have a successful show to sell those merchandise.
All right, and you'll keep me posted on, keep the committee posted on that?
Yeah.
And it'll be reflected in cash flows as we learn more as well.
On page 2 of 15 in Schedule D, docket 26, and we've talked about this before, there's a entry that apparently is an error of Dens Canada LLP being a creditor in the amount of $155,232.82. What is the status of that?
We filed a, at least we instructed our attorney to file an amended SOFA to delete that. It's that money is owed to Dynacane Tech. Dynaking owes Denton that money, not Premier. It's actually in the accounts payable for Dynaking.
Is there an actual invoice from Denton's Canada to Dynaking that you could share with us?
Yes.
Do you know whether that's been paid yet?
It's being paid monthly.
I see. I shouldn't say I see. I understand. So it's being paid down over time?
Correct.
And what was the work that generated that receipt?
I wasn't there at the time, but I presume it would be something to do with the transaction November 1st, the merger.
The merger transaction.
I don't have the SOFA in front of me. What was the amount you read?
The amount was $155,232.82.
Thank you.
It's on page 2 of 15 of docket 26.
Thank you.
Uh, In that same document, docket 26 on page 12 of 15, under a list of contracts and unexpired leases, is the employment agreement with Daoping Bao. As part of the merger agreement, there was also a success agreement dated April, I believe it was 2015. Is that another executory contract that ought to be scheduled on this schedule? I guess that's a legal issue also.
It was part of the purchase merger agreement.
Right.
Considering where you placed it with the accounting right now, the percentile.
Yeah, we valued that for accounting purposes when we finally do get a 10K evidence. Zero. Nothing has happened as part of that contingency.
Well, that was my second question, what the status of the transactions under that success agreement might be. What is the status of it?
The Macau agreement, those two parts of that contingent payment were unsuccessful. The Cedar Fair Parks agreement, at this point we put a value of zero on it, although it doesn't have an expiration date on it. So in 3 or 5 years, if our CEO lands a large contract with them, then it will be on the table again.
But presently they're not renewing.
Well, they're not renewing right now. We're actually trying to find homes for a lot of dinosaurs.
I'll ask counsel if you could look into whether that ought to be scheduled as executory contract and get back to me.
Okay. So much for digital, eh?
You can make it in.
There's a reference I'm looking at the monthly operating report, docket 29, at page 23 of 23, and I see the question may have already been answered. There's a reference here to a John Norman contract, $18,074 that was owed. Is that the same Pompeii exhibit we were just talking about? I'm just showing Mr. Henschel the page I was referring to. It's the second paragraph there.
It's Pompeii. I'm under most sure it's Pompeii.
Oh, yes. Right. Yeah, part of the transaction, he would assume one of our accounts payable. So at this point, just part of that agreement for him to take over the Pompeii exhibits was he would assume that the accounts payable of $18,074 to Mondo Mostra.
Okay. If you could just send me some detail on that transaction, I'd appreciate it.
I'll send you the contract.
That would be great. Thank
and
you.
The recent email where he offered us $50,000 for the exhibit.
Which was stipulated in the agreement.
Yeah.
And just so we all understand, when we first went to one committee, let's make sure we refer it to both committees and then you have to furnish the documents.
Okay.
In that same packet of pages I just gave you, if you could take a look at document 29-1, page 105.
That's page 105.
Yeah.
And you may well have covered this already, but I need some clarification. Down under accounts receivable, there are two entries that It looks like it means intercompany dinosaurs, intercompany dinosaurs on Earth. Could you just tell me what those entries refer to and what they mean?
Premier Exhibition Management, at the date I did this balance sheet, had a receivable of $480,000 from Dynaking. I will tell you, at this point, we had not reconciled the intercompany account.
Okay.
And we cleaned it up on the September one.
So these are old numbers.
Correct, yeah. I inherited the accounting system I inherited by my predecessor. It was a disaster, so...
Ignoring the...
Sorry, I didn't mean to go at you.
Yeah, I remember the first one, so...
Ignoring the numbers themselves, what confuses me is this is, as I understand it, Premier Entertainment Management is
Exhibition.
The...
Premier Exhibition Management.
Exhibitions Management, thank you. Is the administrative arm, if I could use that phrase, that pays the bills and the like. So, do I read this correctly that Premier Exhibitions Management paid some items on behalf of Dynaking from whom reimbursement is due, or am I reading that backwards? And again, ignore the numbers because they've been reconciled to new numbers.
I think it's always the other way around, that Dynaking pays for Premier and Premier owes money back.
We have both sides to this, and you'll see it on the next September. There's an accounts payable to Diana King, $700,000, and then there's an accounts receivable for just over $400,000. The net is...
Okay, so you're showing on the accounting the receivables and the payables due intercompany from each to the other,
yes.
And they're reconciled at the end of each month?
They are now, yes.
Okay. And are these reconciled by book entries, by wire transfers, by checks? How do you do the reconciliation?
Sorry, they're not reconciled by settlements. They're reconciled in terms of the same number agrees on each set of books.
I see.
One company owes you this amount. It's the same amount that the other company shows as receivable. So.
Okay, so at the end of the day, how are payments made back and forth to zero these sums out?
At this point, we haven't netted them out yet.
Okay.
It's something I can do. But I can't pay the pre...
Right. I was going to interject. Are you offsetting pre- and post-petition numbers?
Not at this point, and you know, it's part of the reason why we keep them separate.
Is there something that you've produced already that you could point me to that would help me reconcile, if I'm using the wording correctly, forgive me, the intercompany balances?
On the September MOR, the balance sheet, I made some notes. I write on the balance sheet that you can download.
Okay, I thought I was looking at the September.
This is August. Yeah.
Oh, filed in September. I see.
The September ones I filed last night, or no, pardon me, Friday night, whatever it was.
Forgive me, I haven't reviewed them yet. So if I go to those MORs, I may ask for some help in finding in those MORs that the numbers I'm looking for, but what I'm looking for is a balancing of the intercompany transfers. Accounts.
There's going to be a general ledger that backs all your accounts.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Right, that's what I'm looking for. So I may ask you for some guidance in finding that in what was filed last week. If you're using the same packet on page 4 of 5, toward the top of the page, you'll see entries called intra-company. And the second one down is a big number. And I see some are in parentheses, some are not. And could you tell me what this means, what I'm looking at?
The previous predecessor, CFO, and probably even before him, they had they had decided to set up their general ledger by operating units versus by legal units. So they had, I'm puzzled like you, but it's something I was trying to wrestle with now. They had all these intra companies, meaning between divisions.
Forgive me for interrupting you, but my puzzlement was that I would have assumed the operating units coincided with the legal units, and I take it that's not the case.
That's not the case.
All right, sorry to interrupt you, please.
So they had set up, let's say, general ledgers, if you want to say, a separate set of books for operating units like Bodies, Titanic. Then they had some of these entities they set up in this master general ledger, which had all these different sub-general ledgers in it. They had some of the legal entities as well, and they were all... In the end, when you consolidate, they all come to zero. But if you ask me right from here,
right,
which one of these is in which legal entity?
Well, it's the one that I, my eyes popped at was the $57 million entry for due from / to Corp. And two questions rose in my mind, is it due or is it from? is it due from or is it due to?
Corp is
a and who's Corp?
Corp is probably the premier DNA parent company, I presume.
Okay. In subsequent MORs, are you kind of unmesh?
Well, this is the legal statement. And again, unfortunately, I've inherited this. And to know the history for me to go back and undo all these would be a decade of work.
I understand. And my interest is really in understanding where the intercompany accounts fall today.
On a legal entity basis... I can't tell you right now. I can try to ask my assistant controller if she knows which one of these are in which legal entity, but some of these are definitely just due and from business units, not legal units.
Understood. Yeah. Dan, I may want to follow up with you on that, but I think I understand where you're going with that. Then we've got a whole lot of detailed general ledger, and there is just some names that jumped out at me.
You read that, good. 300 pages.
I had a free half hour. Titanic Milan license fee. Do you know what that's about?
We have partners in Europe. They have two of our units. The same unit that's going into the Titanic Turing unit that's going into the museum in Italy.
And under which entity?
That's Premier. That's ours. Premier Exhibition.
Okay. That's the main parent entity, Premier Exhibitions.
Yeah, everything's... Premier Exhibitions does not even have a bank account. All the banking administration is done by Premier Exhibitions Management.
PEM, so that's PEM is
we
the operating
PEM,
company.
Yeah. PEM.
Now, I had a question in that packet. You should have the last page, I think, should be 4 of 6. Did I do that right? The very last page. Now, we talked about salaries before, and you mentioned that there's, forgive me, it's either been filed or you're going to provide a statement as to salaries and the split between the entities. Has that been provided?
It has, yes, okay. with the cash flows I prepared.
This past weekend?
No, the first set. The ones I did this weekend were for the Canadian operation.
I see. Under compensation, salaries, and severance, are those amounts that are being paid now?
In terms of salaries?
In terms of salaries first, and then in terms of severance.
We're not paying any severance at this point.
Well, that's what I was wondering about, because there are entries here from March, April, May, June, July. The last one is July 31.
I'm trying to think who left in July that we may have paid a settlement to a small settlement. I'm sorry, I don't call. I'll look it up for you.
Well, my question, and maybe you could follow up on this, is whether there are pre-petition severance agreements that currently are being paid post-petition. From this, I have no idea which severance this is, or but it looks like a payment was made in July of this year.
Yeah. This compensation line, by the way, does not include salaries for the venues, like the staff that are permanent venues.
What is included in that salary line?
Everything else. Like it, for the Vegas Luxor Hotel, we have a general manager who runs that, assistant manager, and then all the staff that staff the doors and do the photography, sell merchandise. Those are cost of production. They're not in this particular area of the financial team.
Okay.
Because you look here, it's not, it's here and here, right? So there's one in March. It's like almost a quarterly. See? And then in July.
What time is it?
This is from the monthly operating report, docket 216 in RMS Titanic. On page 3 of 26 is total other receipts. And it says other receipts includes loans from insiders and other sources, officer, owner, related parties, directors, related corporations. Please describe. There's a zero there. Are there loans from insiders? Are there loans from?
There. The $25,000 came from Penn, from Premier Exhibition Management. We outlined it on the lineup just up above the quarterly transfer.
I see that.
Penn, yeah.
So would that come under other sources?
Technically, you're right. We should have put it in that particular area as well.
Yeah, and I'm just quarterly transfer from in from PEM operating account.
We're required under the trust agreement.
That's what I was wondering.
The Norfolk settlement.
Right.
We have to pay $25,000 a quarter into this trust account until it reaches $5 million.
For the American artifacts.
I was going to ask you. I'm sorry.
For my benefit. Yeah.
For the American artifacts.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about another entry, and I'll instead of a question, I'll make it a statement. There are entries here: bank transfer, Dynaking Tech Inc. rental fees $50,000. On July 7 and on July 28, a bank transfer, Dynaking Tech Inc. rental fees $80,000. And those are the rental fees you talked about earlier.
Correct, yeah. And again, this year we haven't reconciled them at the end of the year. We just transferred money up from Dinosaurs on Earth, got transferred up to Dynaking.
And again, what we're interested in is in getting in one place some feel for what these transfers are all about. And you're going to help us.
Right. Time King is not going to run away with the money. Like, it's a wholly owned subsidiary of Premier. Like, it's all the same. Like,
in fact, it says right here, Dinosaurs on Earth is a wholly owned subsidiary of Dynaking Tech. I'm trying to skip some stuff that Mr. Tams already covered. The other questions I had on those pages I just flipped, I think, were covered already in this examination, so I'm going to move on. I don't want to belabor this, so I'll just... Succinctly, I was going to inquire about the... there was a first day, it's called the first day order, authorizing continued use of Canadian and U.S. checking accounts by Dinosaurs on Earth and Dynakin. And I we'd like to get a hold of the bank statements on those two accounts.
Which accounts specifically?
They're the accounts that are covered by the June 27 order authorizing continued access and use of Dynaking Unearth Canadian bank account. You know which order we're talking about.
Yes.
We'd like to get the bank statements on those accounts.
There are, I think, four accounts. Do you want Dynakings and Dinosaurs? And
yes.
Both of them?
Yes.
Peter, may I borrow your highlighter for just a minute? Thank you.
Discussions with any third parties about providing financing that would either prevent a filing or finance the company in a filing.
We're talking about Dynaking?
We're talking about before the bankruptcy filing of Premier and its affiliates.
Yeah, no, I wasn't. I
know, that's why I'm kind of looking at the standards when I asked them.
The company did explore a couple of options. They looked at perhaps going back to previous lenders, perhaps looking to PacBridge for additional funding. So looking for some funding.
Well, the question is not what you considered, but did you actually talk to alternative funding sources, let's say within the quarter before the filing in June of this year? And could you let us know who those sources were?
Specifically, we spoke with PacBridge Partners for additional funding. But discussions only, nothing was ever papered.
Understood. Anyone else?
Not that I can recall immediately.
And did the company speak with financial advisors prior to the filing?
The special committee of the board of directors retained a financial advisor as well as an attorney, which was Glass Ratner.
And the attorney was?
Gardner Davis.
Gardner Davis.
With Gardner.
Yeah, thank you. Those were closed meetings, so I didn't participate in
those. Who were the members of the special committee?
Sid Duchak was, Michael Evans, and I believe Ming Cheng was the third person, Ming Cheng Tao.
Is there any particular, I'm trying to think how to phrase this without stepping on attorney-client privilege.
I'll try to figure out how to answer.
Now, the company wound up not retaining Glass Ratner and not retaining Foley Lardner. Is there any particular reason why?
Well, the company did retain Glass Ratner for an engagement to advise the special committee, and when they gave the recommendation, their retainer was actually complete at that point. There was no stipulation for ongoing services. The company then went back to Glass Ratner trying to leverage monies already paid for Glass Ratner to become familiar with the company and for its setup, to then now use them for financial advisory services. Is that fair?
I think I did.
Cool.
I would like to find out what advice was given.
We're here.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Good answer. But I'll talk to Dan and Brian.
That's fine.
I was going to inquire about insider transactions within the year before the filing, but you've got those in your schedule, so let me review those and get back to you if I have any additional questions. April, before the filing, the company restated its financials. And I have two questions for you about that.
Not Premier. I think you're talking about Dynafing.
Dynafing, that's right. Who did the initial financial reports? Who were the auditors that worked on that initial?
Is it MPP?
MNP.
MNP.
Mm-hmm. And MNP, I noted, is listed in your schedule of creditors.
They haven't been paid.
Who is currently the company's auditors?
Cherry Becker.
Cherry Becker. And who did the restatement? Who discovered that there had to be a restatement on that financial?
I believe it was Cherry Becker that advised the Dining King's auditors that they had done it improperly.
And do you
according
know
to the timing of
lease
financial accounting standards, they were using one auditing firm was using a proactive approach and taking the exposure draft, the future, what was going to happen. They had to use the present accounting standard, not the future one.
And do you know when that occurred?
No, I wasn't.
Do you know when that was realized?
I think it was fairly close to when we made the release. Yeah, our then SEC attorney said basically at the time you know is when you have to disclose.
And could you just find out when that was?
Sure.
What's the date on that again? You have that on just right there?
No,
March.
It was April of 2016. I want to say the 12th, but I'm not sure about the 12th.
I know it was in the spring that we did the 8K on it.
Okay, there currently are still some outstanding deficiencies in SEC filings. Do you know what's happening with that?
We're working towards filing a 10-K dated December 31st.
2015?
Correct.
What's your most, the company's most recent tax return?
February 28th, 2015.
And that's your fiscal year, it's February 28th?
It was the premier fiscal year is February 28th. Diamond King is December 31st.
So have you reconciled the two to one date?
At this point, we have chosen December 31st.
And
that may change, though. We'll see.
And
are you?
When is the last tax return then for the year December 2015? When was that due, or when is it due?
We got an extension. It was due, I believe, September 15th, and we haven't filed it. But our tax accountants are suggesting that. For accounting purposes, we use December, but for tax, we maintain the same February year and then switch it to December the following year. So we're not late in filing at this point. If we use a February year, February 16th, we're not due until November 15th.
I'm impressed that you keep that all in your head. Who are the tax accountants working at that point?
BDO, USA.
And who's doing the SEC filings for him?
Pardon me, for us?
Yeah.
We are. The 10-K, we're working on it.
Yeah, no, but do you have outside counsel on that?
We don't have any security counsel at this point.
Okay. And do you have a sense as to timing on when that's going to be filed?
Certainly, our board of directors are very concerned about it, and I'm going to say by the end of the year.
Do you have anything else?
I think we have questions in the last.
Yes. We're going to follow up on the matters that we left open and we'll reserve any further questions, but that's all that I prepared for today.
Okay, thank you, Peter.
If I could get that, the sign up sheet for me. Are there other creditors present who have questions of the debtor representatives? You have a follow-up question, Mr. Thomas?
Yeah, no one else has questions. I just want to follow up. Mr. Griffin showed you the August 31st, 2016 balance sheet, and we were talking about the $57 million due from two corporation figure. You said you're in the process of reconciling that out. When do you anticipate finishing that reconciliation?
I don't even know if it's possible to have the history of where that actual balance came from. There, on the other side, there's another account. If you consolidate all the business and legal entities, they all come to zero. So there's another company that has the offsetting amount. And I'll have to find in the filings which one it is. So for every payable, there's a receivable. In this case, the 54, is it a plus or a minus?
It's a 57 plus, and then we have...
So there's a 57 minus, and a bunch of other companies that add up to that, or entities or business units.
We have due from slash two Titanic about 5.8 million. It brings the number down to $43 or $44 million, and I guess My assumption was that these other due from twos were offsets against the $57 million. But they don't zero out, so where are the other liabilities going to be?
Certainly, if there's another balance sheet in there called consolidated. I don't know. It might be in the Prixie filings. It has all the entities, and you'll see the same list of intercompanies, only it comes to zero. So the missing ones there to make it zero will show up on that consolidated one.
Well, the general ledger for the $57 million figure is going to go back. I know the number has accumulated since the beginning of the companies, but sometimes when there's an accounting system, you just have a beginning balance for your general ledger and you move forward. My question is, how far back do your accounting record, the general ledger, go? How far back does it go presently?
Boy, I don't know. I don't know when they purged it. When they, I do know the my predecessor created under his, the CPA working at the time created a brand new database, a brand new set of books for all these, and he changed all these entities. And the balances he carried forward did not agree to the closing balances, which was part of the issue I had. I had to reconcile them all and make sure that the closing balances agreed to the opening balances of the new accounting database.
Well, but prior change was made in what time frame?
The CPA that did work for Mr. Little, when did he leave?
In the spring.
In the spring. So he started it probably in January, February. He was taking a shortcut. He was just going to take the merger numbers without a trail for me or anyone to follow, and he set up this new set of books. The numbers, didn't know where they came from, so we had to reverse all his work out. And then we had to make sure that at least the numbers we ended with on the 10-Q that we filed in August, we went forward with those numbers and made sure that the new accounting database had the same numbers in it. And then, which is the process why some of the financial statements you've received, there's some crazy bounces in them because we haven't yet sort of come to that point where we've done the merger transaction and the impairments. You'll see some of these entries come in September. There's still a bit more work to do towards the 10-K. But when you look at September's balance sheets and you compare it to August, you'll see the fixed assets went down by $12 million. Well, we finally did the journal entry to impair the New York tenant improvements. And we spent $12 million on improvements. So you'll see that in the next balance sheet. And I've highlighted them now, sort of a warning that we're not done yet. We're working on the 10-K. These are internal statements. They're not meant to be public. When the 10-K comes up, that will be a public statement that will have all the necessary adjustments in it. So the system, just to go back on why these weird numbers, the system was never set up to do legal financial statements. It just wasn't. They, some CFO in there, not necessarily Mr. Little, but someone way back decided he probably wasn't a CPA or an accountant. He said, I want it by this way. Forget about what the legal entity is. I want to know my revenue expenses by exhibits, and I want to know what this exhibit meant to that exhibit. So they created all these weird intercompany accounts. So
across the legal entities.
Yeah, and within the legal entities. So some of those are to and from in the same legal entity. So.
Okay, we could probably go round and round on this. I'll just
But the consolidated one, when you see the consolidated August, you'll see all those intercompany intra and inter come to zero. So for every debit, there is a credit, as Marco Polo would say.
But that's straddling the petition date. If we looked at it on the petition date, would they be zero?
Yeah, they would be.
Okay. All right, I think that's helpful.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm
aren't
done for
that. Are you concerned that you're carrying numbers in monthly MORs that seem to be repeating erroneous or questionable?
I was required by law to file MORs, and they wanted balance sheets and
income.
Was I prepared to give them? No, but I didn't, actually, when I first filed the MORs, I didn't know they were actually going to be public. I thought they were going to the trustee department.
The the intercompany reconciliation, I'm using the term of art, I know, but we'll talk about that separately. One of the assets that is often at the center or is key to reorganization are net operating losses.
I do have those here.
Do you?
Did the BDO not send you those? Because
I have to confess if it's within the last week.
No, no, this is when you first asked. I sent a copy to BDO saying please forward to...
I'll have to take another look at that.
But it's over $20 million.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
I have the tax returns here. Let me find them.
When
to February 28th, 2015, it's over $20 million. That's assuming there's no change in control. All the rules that go around NOLs.
Right. And when you provide projections as you did, I think on Sunday.
Yes.
Would it be possible to also get a 12-month trailing so we have some idea of where it came from and not just where it's going?
That would be a very hard task.
Would that be a hard task?
Yeah. They didn't do monthly consolidated statements for Dinah King and Dinosaurs on Earth. Just wasn't done. Sometimes they only did journal entries at the end of the year. So to go back and try to make a monthly statement actually have meaning for measuring that particular period, it may not. I mean, it'll be the debits will balance the credit, but just say they went from a private company where, you know, at the end of the year your auditor comes in, he does these big journal entries, fixes everything else, and does the tax returns. Now they're in a public company domain where you have to have accurate monthlies and quarterlies. So everything has to be booked.
But you can start at some point with some actual data. And build,
I would say
and start
September
building
going forward.
But, okay, so at some point that we can start doing that actual and then have that to work on projections is something you
that's
can
fine.
Provide.
No, I want to. I want as much as you to be able to measure where we were and where we are now. So
that would be helpful.
All right, we'll follow up on those follow-up issues, and I thank you.
Thank you.
Let me ask... the gentleman on the telephone, did someone have questions? We could try. I don't know that we'll succeed, but... Is anyone on the phone?
Yeah, this is Scott Grossman. I'm still here. I don't have any questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Grossman.
That was the right answer, Scott.
Good answer. All right. And I guess that's everything. I think we're complete for this morning, so I will conclude the meeting in the case of RMS Titanic Inc. and in each of the affiliate cases, all of which were named at the beginning of the meeting. So thank you all. The meeting is concluded. Thank you.
Thank you.